Thank you, Ken. And thank you, Regina. I only caught the last 8 minutes or so. I loved, well, what I got from that was huge, of this letting go of being the seeker. And I was I went to a Muji satsang today. He gave a satsang yesterday, and the sangha in around the world, they get together on Sundays and they'll play his satsang. So it was a very recent one. I think it was, yeah, one he did on Friday. And much of what he talked about was this letting go of the seeker. And it's really resonating with me this week. And I'm always so well, I guess I'm less and less surprised now. Whenever I sit down at Muji Satsang, it feels like the teachings of awakening together of that week are just being reiterated. It's really lovely. And he had this lovely quote from Francis of Assisi, supposedly. The one you are looking for is the one who is looking, which I just love. This evening I thought I'd just start with a prayer before I just share from my journaling over the last week. I have nothing in particular to speak out. There's a couple of themes within that, and there's a song I'd quite like to share, and that's kind of it. So just to start, I'm just going to invite you to join with me in this prayer. Our beloved, beloved one, thank you. Thank you for this day. Thank you for now. Please bless us all that we may awaken fully to the truth of who we are now. Amen. Okay, so yeah, as I mentioned on Wednesday, last weekend I got to do a sort of specific live stream with Muji. It was in Kripalu, Massachusetts. There were about 100 and a bit of us, and it was a live link up specifically for Kripalu in real time, obviously. And it felt like being in the room with Muji. It was so beautifully done, and there was no delay. And even just that short time, really no more than, I don't even think, a full 48 hours in silence, was enough to say enough, just recalibrate. So just to drop some of the Helen identity I've been picking up over the summer, which hadn't been too much, but I noticed I've been putting on more layers, perhaps because it was, and a few were able to shed again that weekend. So this week has been really beautiful, because it feels like that resonance has been with me, which means I've been able to contemplate with more ease, perhaps. I'll say ease, I don't know, but it's been more a less of a striving this week and more of a natural doing in contemplation. Like I feel like this week there wasn't a seeker, there was less of a seeker, perhaps. Still there was one seeking, but it was less, it was more of a just marinating in what is. So with the help of my new reading glasses, which I'm loving, I'm gonna read just some of the things from my journal, and I thought I'd read back through the tips of gentle healing. Let's have a look where to begin. Sorry, I am. My writing is pretty bad, and I don't really sort of take proper notes of like the date and time, so it all sort of blurs into one. So just bear with me. I'm just trying to find. Okay. It's funny. I know when I've been in satsang or on any retreat actually, by the words that are in my journaling. So for the day, whatever the tip was, 228. That day, all I wrote was, "How sweet the discovery of self, unlimited, without boundaries, deep and broad, into nowhere, and discovered by who? By life itself." That sounds like I was swimming in the isthmus when I wrote that, or whoever wrote that. One of the things that was over the weekend, and I mentioned this on Wednesday as well, two things I came away with that weekend that have sort of stuck with me were these two messages: however the self shows up, love that, which I mentioned on Wednesday has been helpful, those words, because it's just a reminder to me that everything in front of me is self. And intellectually I grasp that, but it's not an embodied experience. And so these just simple words are just like a reminder to maybe switch my perspective of when things arise that catch my attention, probably in a more of a negative way, like someone cutting you up or some email asking for some more work to be done or something, that is how self is showing up. And when I hear that, I just think, oh goodness, it's self. Well, that's a whole different ball game, isn't it? So even though that might not be what I would call my experience of, and I'll talk about this a bit later, because I've realized this week that I have an expectation of what these experiences are going to be, of what the self will look like when I look around and see everything as self, and that has to go, and that I think is going. That was one I walked away with, and the other was, I trust life more than I trust mind, which I do believe. I believe strongly that life is to be trusted, and by life, I guess I mean how life shows up. Life just doing its thing. It's a very lovely time of year here in New York. I went to a park yesterday with my dog. And there's dragonflies everywhere, and beautiful butterflies, and a hawk overhead, and sort of, I don't know if they were swallows or swifts, sort of swooping down to pick up the dragonflies where they could. And there was a band playing, and there were children's birthday parties, and it was just all this wonderful, just life happening. And it's so simple. It just takes care of what needs to be taken care of, and then the mind creeps in and tells you things need to be a certain way, and it's not to be trusted. Whereas life, I feel very safe in, and that's something else I'll talk about a little bit later. Anyway, those were the two sort of takeaways I had, and then there was a third, and it was sort of a really sweet sort of coincidence that while I was away at the satsang, I didn't read one of the days of gentle healing. I just sort of felt guided to just sort of be silent and stop doing while I was there, and not, because it's very easy in between breaks to go, oh, what should I do? Well, I'll read, or I'll meditate, or I'll do something. And I've been trying to just catch this doing and see if it's a distraction. So I didn't, and also sort of discern whether that's just the ego saying, hey, you don't need to do your contemplation today. It wasn't. It really felt like it was time not to do. And the satsang that day with Muji, he was talking specifically about how we're all just like together, and there's a little box of messages you could take. Someone so sweetly scrolled up some of his quotes into sort of half-inch scrolls, and you could take one for your pocket. And I opened it, and it said, "The whole world is your family." And it was the, and when I got back to New York and caught up with my contemplations, it was pretty much word for word what was in NTI that day of the reading. Had that been that day, and "The whole world is your family," which was important to me, because I noticed in these talks, I say a lot of things like, I don't care much for people. I really enjoy being on my own. I really love silence. I work on my own. It was the middle of last week. I just thought, or just before I went to Moody, I thought, hang on a minute. I feel like I protest a little too much on this There must be some reason. It's almost like an identity now I've got of like, oh, that's Helen. She likes being on her own. She likes the silence. She likes alone time. And I thought, well, I don't want just another identity. And is that true? And when I sort of explored it, I realized, well, I don't always feel, I feel much safer on my own. It's quieter and I get sort of overwhelmed with lots of noise. But even that's not true because I can go to a rock concert and be perfectly happy and at peace. So it's not true. And I feel like there's something within that that is a there's a real belief in separation. So when I hear things like the whole world is your family, I can feel inside some resistance to that. Like, well, maybe, or is it just me and God and these few people in awakening together and the Muji Sangha and some of my good friends and my family, and then the rest, well, and there's some people I, obviously care about and these people who are suffering over here, yes, I'll bring them in. But it's very hard for me to really embrace that we're all one. And even if we're not, look upon all of the world as my family, in which case I would never feel unsafe anywhere I go. Like, what does that mean? The whole world is our family. It means that we belong. We're all like connected, deeply, deeply connected. I mean, you can't be more connected as a human in your human experience, I would think, other than by blood, or by family, those who've sort of been with you in over long periods of time. So really, blood. My father's adopted, so sort of. And so I have a whole adopted family that are my family too. But that sort of familial tie is probably the most intimate you can get. So the whole world having that intimacy with you is, it can sort of be a little bit scary if the mind gets hold of it. But actually, when you think about it, it's beautiful. In which case, should feel safe wherever I go. There's many people as I'm with, and I noticed at the end of that retreat, I went and sat down to have lunch, and I was sat and ate alone, and it was the first time I actually thought, oh goodness, I really should have gone and sat with a group of people and started speaking with them. And so I did. I went over and chatted with some people, and it was all just lovely. So it was a really so that was sort of the third, I guess. However the self shows up, love that. I trust life more than I trust mind, and the whole world is your family. So here's my journaling for it was the tip for 2:30 about intimately experiencing experience, which I really, really, really loved. So I wrote, "We come to know ourself by intimately experiencing experience. That is only possible when thoughts are not there to judge the experience, or comment on the experience. You can only experience something fully when you are present to it. What does present to it mean? That you are you alone, in pure awareness, there with the experience that is also self, expressing itself perfectly. In this way, you look upon self and experience self, and in doing so, know yourself." So this really struck me, this idea of, we're here. That cannot be denied. We exist. I exist. I am here. That I can say with truth. And in every single moment, there is an experience, and the sort of notion that I'm not being intimate with any of it is sort of shocking, really, when you start to contemplate that. And the only reason is this sort of just veil in the middle of these thoughts and these comments of these judgings, and without them you would really look upon self and experience self, and in doing so know yourself, as it says here. And with that there's this expectation of what that looks like. And I've talked about this before, that I just, and it's going, because I can see that it's a block, this sort of expectation I have of what that experience will be like. That I used to think that experience would be like you're maybe taking acid. You was like, experience things so fully, like the vibrancy of everything would be just so immense, and sounds, it would be like just you'd like notched up your senses to the max. That's how I imagined it. And I was like, I don't even know if I want that. How could I even operate in a world like that? But it's just imagination. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea. And those who have realized self don't seem to struggle with whatever is going on for them. So it was Timothy 2, chapter 1, and my contemplation was, you can experience something and know you are unaffected by it. In that way, it's a pure experience. Like awareness, you can be aware of thoughts and know you are unaffected by the awareness. You become experience and awareness in its purest form, and you therefore know yourself as the one that cannot be affected, the unchanging one, the one that is the experience and the experiencer and is untouched. What is the most intimate of experiences? That in which you know yourself as experience and experiencer, that they are one. Which I found this helpful. I mean, when you think about an intimate experience, you can't get any more intimate with an experience than knowing yourself as one with the experience, as both the one experiencing and the one that is the experience. So just all self. That is like the most intimate you can get, and the only way to have that is to be with that without, say, the thoughts around that, or the judgments around that. So this week I've been sort of keeping an eye on that, but it's hard because the expectation comes in of what it's going to look like, am I doing it yet? I'm letting go of these thoughts. Am I experiencing the experience yet? Am I feel like I'm one with the experience? Regina, I remember you telling a story, and I'm going to get it wrong, about the apple, where you looked at an apple and became the apple. You could feel the apple, and so that's always stayed in my mind. But my practice around this is just within every experience that I remember I am in, whenever I'm aware of it, of just sort of resting behind that. And if thoughts are passing and judgments about that, just aware of that, and then just going back to this resonance inside, which, as I mentioned, has been easier this week because I felt like it's almost a physical vibration that when I've been in silence or a satsang or on retreat, that lingers. And so it's like I almost feel there's no need to go outwards. Because it's such a sweet, I say even sweet's too much, but it's like a buzz, it's like a buzzing, it's just like a ingrained, embodied remembrance, perhaps. So it's much easier to sort of rest there and allow all things to just pass, and then it appears to fade, but that is not the truth. And Muji says that what happens is that after a period like that, if it could come out of meditation or something or contemplation or even just this recognition or remembrance, that the mind comes back to remind you of you. That is what it does. It's not intentional, I'm sure, but the mind comes, and what it does in that coming is it reminds the little you of the little you, and then you're sucked right back out into it again, and you're not present with your experience. You're back in the mind. So whenever you see, that was helpful. Whenever I notice that the mind has come back, I'm like, oh yes, it just has come to remind Helen of Helen, and I can just discard that. So day 20, it was tip 231. How do I rest the mind frequently? So it must have been talking about that. And I'm sorry, I can't flick between them because I lose all the pages if I flick between the tips online and then my journaling. What I keep intending to do is print them all out, but I haven't done it yet. So it seems I forget or I get distracted or I get caught up in the doing. How do I rest my mind frequently? I asked. Number one, you are not the doer. You are the one that is here unchanging. Two, observe. This is a first step, but it is a vital step. Do not judge this step as unimportant. And I heard Muji say that this week as well. He might have said it satsang last week, I'm not sure. But that I think there was I've done a lot of observing. I'm aware of my thoughts when they come up. I'm aware of judgments. I didn't used to be, but now it appears that I am. I guess I was always aware that they were there, but now it's sort of more consciously aware that of the thoughts. And I'm not drawn to just observe them, I'm drawn to turn that awareness back onto itself and rest in the heart and just let things pass. And just stay focused on that place inside. In one of Muji's talks, he mentioned that, yeah, don't be so quick to just do that. It's important, that whole step of practicing, to be being the observer. So I guess I was just echoing this when I asked inside. Three, rest the mind when you can. Eating, yoga, meditation, contemplation, walking, even if you're watching TV, just rest the mind when you are able. And what was interesting about this week, I was completely able to do many, many things and be in that, as I've got nothing best to say, better way of saying it, but the resonance. So there was this doing taking place, and sometimes I noticed, I can't remember, we watched Jack Ryan. I don't know if you've seen this. My parents loved it and told us to watch it. So we watched it this week, and it's an action series. So the mind sort of gets, fortunately it's not like brilliant, so the mind doesn't get too involved in, it's not Game of Thrones. The mind doesn't get completely absorbed in it. But I was sort of able to sort of sit at times in rest in the heart, and then just also be watching Jack Ryan, and then sometimes the mind would get into the storyline a bit, and then it would sort of come. I'd be able to sort of just rest again. So it was possible, even watching TV, it was possible. Number four, do not forget that you are what is, and what is always here, regardless of whether the seeming you remember it or not. You cannot forget yourself. The one who forgets, the one caught up in mind, is not you. Do not believe that you are the one who is distracted. Distraction appears to happen, just like thoughts appear or emotions appear. Distractions is merely another appearance. It's my dog's chicken. It's spoiled. Sorry about that. Alarm bell. Distraction appears to happen just like thoughts appear or emotions appear. Distractions is merely another appearance arising in the whole of what you are. You cannot not be aware of it, because pure awareness is what you are. Don't feel bad about distraction or forgetting. That would simply be believing to be true a person who can be distracted. Just be aware of this thought, let go, and turn within. So this is another one that gets that's been a bit sticky for me. This I've been distracted. I've been distracted, and you know, come back. I forgot where I was again. Come back, and this question of how can I remember more? How can I remember more? And I think that's a valid thing to explore, because you want to remember more, but within that there is this tendency to create an I that gets distracted. And that reinforces, for me, a belief in a person who can be distracted. It sort of reinforces this idea of it's a person looking for the one back there. It's this person who gets distracted by something and then has to remember that they are something else. Like there's this else, there's a separation in that whole sort of thought system around distraction. It's sort of how, for me, I've been sort of thinking, how do I gently walk that path of pulling, like bringing myself back, because I know where my true place is and where I want to rest, sort of not getting caught up in this play of the one that goes out and the one that's distracted and the one that pulls it back. So who is the one pulling it back? To whom are they pulling it back to, or to what? So just be aware of the thought, oh, I've been distracted, let go and turn within. Look, I'm believing I'm a person again, but who is this I am that is believing? Are they real? No. So that could be one way of coming back. And then I asked again, and it said another way of saying all of that is just I am that I am. So noticing I'm distracted, I would just say I am that I am, and it comes back. So in that, it's sort of like almost a disbelief of even being able to be distracted. I am that I am. I am that I am. Which I think was in the reading this week again. Excuse me, just having a sip of my tea. Then let's have a look. So on this, however, despite saying not worrying about being distracted and things like that, I was guided to read back through some of my journaling and also facilitating the MPP course on NTI at the moment, and that also recommends in it. I don't want to give it all away, but it recommends in it going back through the parts of the course you've done already and reviewing part of this course. And so that was sort of helpful to me to go back. And what came from that, I realised there were some tips that I'd either got from gentle healing or that had come from journaling that had been helpful, that I wanted to put down in one place and to every morning just read through, or maybe several times during the day. And so I've been doing that and it has been helpful. So I'll just read this short list to you. Letting go of expectations. And as I mentioned on Wednesday, my realization about these expectations when and awakening will look like, what it means, what it will be as an experience to look upon everything as self, like to let go of all that, but also letting go of all the expectations I have on life. Of if I truly mean I trust life more than I trust mind, I have to let go of these expectations I have of life. Life was just playing out, you know. As I mentioned on Wednesday, like it shouldn't, I have expectations of how I should be greeted by my partner when he walks in the door after work, or what would happen, what should happen when I tell my dog to sit down. I mean, these are not really big things, but I'm just trying to pick examples, or of how much workload I should have, or what my life should look like right now, or what I should be doing with the free time I have, or things like that. It's just lots of expectations. So letting go of expectations. Two, listen only to guidance. Get me a beer, I love you. That's great, Joe, yeah. I don't care if you've been at work all day. Get me a beer. Is that me talking or him? Get me a beer sounds like I love you, I guess, when you see everything itself. listen only to guidance. So again, that's sort of trusting life more than I trust the mind. So I just noticed that the mind has really been telling me some things that I've bought into these past couple of years, that fortunately are going, but with hindsight I can see that I really bought into a couple of strong thoughts about how the universe was out to get me, because we've not been able to have children, and we've not been able to, we've just not had no luck buying a house. So that seemed to, that they must, they were very, very important to start. I think they've gone now. So I say that they've diminished now. So I now don't listen to mine at all when it talks to me about these things. I can just listen to guidance, but that's grace, because I feel like those desires were taken from me, because I don't know if I'd had the strength to give them up on my own. But so trusting guidance. Three, let all judgment cease. Ooh, let all judgment cease. Which I love. I love to let go of judgment, so that's a nice one. It's catching them. Some are pretty subtle. Witness thoughts and emotions. Commit to happiness, love, acceptance, peace, and gratitude. That's been a very helpful one from the tips for me. When I feel I'm listening to the mind, even mundane things of the mind, ramblings on, you know, it's mind likes to imagine decorating rooms. Bizarre. I don't know why. It's not bizarre. I guess it's unusual. It's not something I would have thought this person was that into, but the mind really likes it, and it can take up a lot of bandwidth. So it's fun to catch and say, well, I'm committed to happiness, love, acceptance, peace, gratitude, whichever one works for me in that moment. And that brings me back into the silence and out of that. And I can feel like the tension of that, of flicking through Pinterest or imagining in my head what a room is going to look like, and the color of paint. It's just, what do I want to spend my time doing? I don't know what number this is, but at all times, look to for the isness you are. So that's that, just bringing it back to resting in silence inside. See all beings as one self. Remember, no one thing is more special or real. And this was important to me, and that includes thoughts and emotions. So I think sometimes we can talk about, oh, you know, no one person is special or real other than the other. But it was, for me, helpful to take this further and realize that no emotion is either. Some catch you more, like maybe grief. You think, oh goodness, or more than maybe anger, which you can let go of. But they're all just emotions. They're all just, you know, energies passing through. And same with thoughts. Some thoughts we cling to more than, seem more special than others. But every single thought is the same. How can it not be? The same. Every emotion is the same. They just appear to have more juice than another, but it's not true. So when we say, we're even saying this one was harder to let go of than this one, that may be how it appears because of conditioning, but actually they're all just the same. Remain humble. You, the person, cannot comprehend grace. I fear often about arrogance, you know, can sort of swing between I'm not good enough to I know more than, or I know it all kind of thing. So remaining humble, it's important for me to be reminded every day that I do not know. Love one another as if it is the second chance to live this day. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie About Time. It's really it's a sweet movie. I think, and it's I don't think it'll give it away. I mean, there's nothing to give away, really. It's just a nice movie to watch. But it's about a man, a young man, who is told by his father that in their family, among the men, they can travel back in time. They can't travel forward in time, but they can travel back in time only in their life. They can't travel back and see the dinosaurs or anything. They can just. So if they feel like they made a mistake or something, they can go back and have another go at it. And the movie is about this, the young guy, and his life just unfolding, and he often pops back and, you know, changes some of the things he does to get the girl and to, you know, not screw up his first date and things like that. And it's very sweet, or to get more time with people he cares about, who who then pass. Or just, if he didn't treat someone well, he'll go back and do it again. And his father gives him some advice later in life and says what he does with this time, this gift they've been given, is he runs every day. He just has a normal day. He doesn't even think about anything. Just lives out the day as he would, with its ups and downs, its anxieties and its grief and its anger and all the things that happen. And then the next day he goes back and will live that day all over again, without the, because he's already lived it, he now can take out all of the grief and the worry and the anger and can just be present throughout that whole day. And so he does this, and he talks about how beautiful it is and how he notices the small things and how special the world is when he does this. And I was really touched by it and thought, how wonderful that was. And then later on, and it's a movie worth watching. I hope I'm not spoiling. I don't think I am. He sort of says that he just drops that, because in the end, with so much practice of doing that, he just lives every day, from that place. And I thought, that's it. That's really, that's the goal, isn't it? If there is a goal, that would be the experience if we were, living from the our true identity. So that's what stuck with me. So, and I like the reminder. It reminds me of the choices I have, to do things differently. Love all things, they are isness. And that's important to me. What is time for? To heal the mind. So just remembering to be conscious of not, I can get a bit lazy with time. I can just, pass an hour of doing nonsense. And so I want to sort of remember, if I'm going to do nonsense, do it while sitting in the isness. Not, or recognizing that I am the isness rather than just doing it. Bucketing thoughts as a practice, I found this helpful, just to notice thoughts and say, that's a fear thought, that's a separation thought, that's an emotion of grief. And it stops me from going into the story. Remembering emotions and thoughts are resistance because they are distractions. That's from Luke, I believe, NTI Luke. Remember, emotion and thought are resistance because they are distractions. Whenever there's distraction, there's resistance. However, the self shows up, love that. Remember, the mind comes to remind you of you. And this one is, Muji said this: don't remind the world it is suffering. Remind the world it is happy and free. So I thought it was just such a sweet way to live. Don't remind the world it is suffering. Remind the world it is happy and free. Okay. So, it's, funny when you have normally it's half an hour, so it's interesting. An hour, I don't know. I have in my mind a bit about whether it's just me rambling on and whether this is too dry. Should I break for a song? But there will be a song in a few minutes. So this week we were asked, in Gentle Healing, to ask the question, what am I? And I've been doing dyads every week. Where using my question has been, who am I? So I sit for 5 minutes with a partner, or 6 minutes we do actually, and asking the question, who am I? We take turns and then we answer from that direct experience. And so we decided to switch our question to, what am I, this week? And it was really revelatory, if that's the right word. So I wrote, to ask this feels very different to asking, who am I? Like there is, who am I actually puts, it felt like something, I put something between the self with a big S and self with a small S. For example, when I ask, who am I? And I might look within and feel peaceful. I will say, I'll use an adjective. I would say, I, who am I? I am peaceful. I am happy. I am feeling angry. I am noticing, sensations of X. But when the question was switched to what am I, the answers became very naturally, when I look within and I'd see peace, I am peace. Not I am peaceful. I'm a person or a thing that is experiencing peace or feeling peace. Instead, it was very like I look inside and I am peace. The peace is there, and therefore, what am I? I am peace. And that felt much, it felt like a whole layer just dropped with the switching of that question. That I didn't have to be this person in the middle. I was, or it wasn't person, the who I had a sense wasn't obviously a person, but there was still this sort of sense of an identity, perhaps, that was that quality. Whereas this was like, no, there is no identity of this quality. Right now, there is peace. Yeah, it was good to sort of mix that up, and I may stick with that for a while. And during that dyad, a few things happened. I have some very sort of insights that came up, switching from what to what am I. I noticed that there was an expectation of something profound to happen. That answer, that looking within and asking the question, what am I? That just feeling peace wasn't enough for the mind. It was expecting, I don't know, fireworks or something. I don't know what it was expecting. Expecting some sort of explosion of color. I don't know. I don't know. But I could clearly see that there was a doubt that came up of, is that it? And it's helpful because in Muji's invitation, which I listen to regularly, he does warn you that when you start to go within, the mind will say, well, this is boring. There's nothing here. It's simply the mind trying to regain control. So having that echoed in my head, I've listened to it enough that I know the words now. It was helpful because I could say, ah, that's just the mind saying, this isn't it. This isn't it. What also came up in that dyad was I realized I'm a safe container. And that was very beautiful, like to know that when we rest in the self, we see ourselves as completely safe. Because all can arise within us, and here we are, unchanged. And it's maybe that is the peace, just like this huge relaxing and peace, because it's just such a safe, and I say container, but that's probably not the right word, but I'm a safe container, and all can arise in me. And I've noticed this week, I wake in the night, and the mind, I might wake into thoughts about. Houses, it's a real one for me. It's interesting. I mean, I can observe it, but I notice that the mind, and I think it's just sort of winding down, but it's still there. It's like got some momentum in it. It's kind of carry on going for a while. But even the, and then there'd be a judgment about, oh my God, really? I've woken up in these thoughts about this houses again. And that judgment is. It's also safe that if I wake up and the thoughts of houses are there, that's fine because I am here and I'm the one in which that arose. So what is the problem? There's so much room, there's so much space for all that to arise. It's just so beautiful. There's nothing that's not allowed. There's nothing that's not permissible in the self, and it just it's such I don't I can't describe it. It's just such a wonderful knowing that all is welcome, all is okay within that. What also happened, and this was where I kind of am getting sort of pausing, I guess, and this will be my sort of contemplations for this week. Is that I sense this anxiety. I wake up and it's been happening for about 8 months. I wake up and I'm anxious, like about 3. I seem to wake up into thoughts, and it, depending on what's happening, it'll be different thoughts. Like, I'll be thinking about the work I have to do the next day, or I'll be thinking about a drive I have to do, or even that I just have to go and have lunch with someone, or I wake up into thoughts of how to decorate a house. I mean, just, you know. But, and I, up until sort of this past couple of weeks, would have said I was waking up into things that were causing me anxiety, that I had these thoughts about things in the world that were causing me stress. And one way that I might be able to not do that is to reduce that stress in my life, to cut back my workload, for example, or just cancel what the things I was doing the next day. But what I realized this week is that none of that has anything to do with this anxiety, because what I've noticed is that more and more I sit in, I'm going to say meditation or contemplation, of sort of touching that place inside, or taking that position of that, the truer position, is that there is a constant flavor of anxiety running. And it can attach itself to anything in the world, as it has been. Like, well, the mind has made a connection where it's that, or it's that, or it's that. But I am feeling like, oh, there's a deeper recognition that it's nothing it to do with anything in the world. In fact, this I know, there is either just anxiety, but I'm also feeling, and I'm trying not to turn it into a concept, of it's the flavor of being a human being, of being, of the human experience, maybe, of the not knowing who you are, or of the not remembering, or of the identifying with the person. I don't know which way best to say this. The latter felt more right. But it's an anxiety, or is it? It has a feeling of, there's something I must do. That's how it feels. If it had words, it would just say, there's something I must do. And then I think what's happened is the mind has covered up in the past, or I've not been able to see it. And so I've just said, there's something I must do. I must reduce the amount of work I do. Or maybe if I think now about that feature I have to write tomorrow, that will help reduce the stress in the day. Or maybe if I, okay, I could just cancel my lunch, or I could do this or do that, or I'll meditate now, or if I did this now, what if I prayed now? Or you have, I'm just reading on the board, I have been feeling something similar rising more frequently too. Yeah, it just, there's this, that if I gave it a voice, it would say, there's something I have to do. And I have this suspicion that that is this person identity. And when I sort of lay there, it was like 3 a.m. again, and I'd woken up and I was like, okay, well, let's kind of just look at this, or be open to what this is. And what arose was, it seemed to be an energy that was, it was sort of saying, I need to do something. And it was like, felt lost. Like, I don't know where I am. I don't know. And when I say I, it wasn't I, the person. It was this sort of sense of, I can't find myself. I can't find myself. And then the next step would have been, if I do something, think, pick up a thought, meditate, read a spiritual text, get out of bed and go to the bathroom and drink a cup of water, or, if I do something, then that will be resolved in me. But I saw it. And now I'm like, wow, okay, there's a, maybe it's a real game changer for me, because I spent a lot of time thinking, blaming things for this anxiety. But I have a suspicion that it might be the flavor of personhood. So, because when I lay there, also this observing, I felt very clearly that there is nothing to do, that the one you are looking for is the one you are looking from. With, I mentioned earlier, sort of followed on from a couple of things Regina said at the end of the talk I caught just now. And it felt so such a I want to say relief, but there was relief. But yeah, like there was a boundary there, or there was some sort of there was something there. But then, you know, I pondered about this again, and then this morning I wrote because I could see what was happening. It said, "Be careful not to create another concept." And I know you have seen that the anxiety is not attached to outer things. You have also seen it is not your natural state. Remain in your natural state and let concepts go. You know who you are by knowing who you are not, but do not become the one who knows what they are not. Become the one that is. Which was really helpful because I could tell I was like getting onto a bit of, oh, I think I've caught something here. I think I'm onto something. So now I that was helpful. And when I asked a bit about it, I wrote, I feel an inner peace sense, an inner joy, a background vibration of peace and giddiness that I know is me and all is well. And I can see thoughts arise that want to plan for a house, etc. But there is a gentle pull backwards to rest in this awareness that has nothing to do with me. It just feels like there's a very natural coming back to it. And I just want to say this was not my experience today. This was my experience when I wrote this, which was yesterday. So, in the night, it felt like a very sweet. In the night, it felt like a very sweet push-pull, but it was not chastising. I was always here. There was also a sense, when not realizing this, of being lost. Where did I go? And it sort of became a sort of panic. Could it be that the panic anxiety is the feeling of not knowing ourselves as one with God? Of believing ourselves lost or separate, is that all there is? Is it all it is? And then I asked, and it was written, it is an ancient belief of humanity that there is a separate you to God, and this causes great pain. All pain, all suffering, all anxiety has this belief at its root. Now you can see this is not true. Now you see that anxiety has no place in your world, nor does fear nor pain. For neither anxiety, fear, nor pain are of God. And this you well know, being at one with God. And I felt a sense of like, I can't believe I've bought into that for so long. You know, driving myself mad about why am I such an anxious person? I'm an anxious person. I have this level of anxiety that's constantly running because I have XYZ. And so it said, don't cry for what's past or that you did not realize it sooner. For who do you cry for? Another false belief. Rejoice that you have found your home and that you were never lost. And it's interesting to me because I've been thinking about I must have a home, I must have a home, which has driven this obsession with buying a house for the last few years. And when I was doing the labyrinth with the Muji Satsang, I asked about, I still had it on my mind when I first got there. And this was what I wrote. Is it possible that here now is where I am supposed to be because I am here? The feeling I have of not being in the place I'm supposed to be is simply because I'm not fully being in the place I am. And that felt really profound to me that all this time I've been thinking, I don't feel at home. Is it because I'm not in England? Is it because I'm supposed to have a house and I'd feel more nested? Is it because I'm a tourist and we like our roots and all of this story, story, story? And then to sort of realize that it's that this sort of feeling I have of not being where I'm supposed to be is simply could simply be because I'm not being in the place that I am. So no wonder I feel like I'm not where I'm supposed to be and not home. So that was written last weekend. So it was sort of lovely to sort of have this sort of finalized, I guess, by sensing that I never have been lost and I always have been in my home. So But it's 4 minutes two, and I really want to play a song which is 5 minutes, so I don't know if I'll get time to play the whole thing. But thank you for joining me this evening. I'm looking forward to staying on. Oh, thanks, Shauna. Hugs to you too. Let's get this going. We'll see. Right. So thank you. Hope you have a lovely evening. And okay, here we go. See if this works. It's Omkara, by the way. Thank you, and I hope you have a lovely evening. Thanks. Bye.